Jones and Keefe. We are live from Gillette Stadium on WEEI, presented by McFarland Energy. The heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros at Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlandEnergy.com. Tommy Tuesday, if you're watching on twitch.tv/BostonWEEI, which you should be. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. I just blow out your eardrums there, Tommy.
On that initial,
Sorry, White Stripes. They'll get you. They'll get you going. It's no. What were you singing when you came up here?
I was singing Steelers wheels. Steelers wheels stuck in the middle with you. If you guys have seen Reservoir Dogs,
sure.
Stephen Wright was your DJ on that particular program. Mm-hmm.
Curran, your takeaways here on day six. What I know you're watching the receivers very, very close. What was your big sweeping takeaway today?
Sweeping takeaway was, again, another fun practice. I think the offense is doing better than I would have imagined. And that was echoed by both Cole Strange, when we talked to him, and Josh Dobbs, who said a little uneven in terms of the high red zone and the low red zone. That's being inside the 10 or even down around the 5 at the early portion of practice. But Dobbs thought that they showed much better in the latter portions, and they did. A lot of quick opening stuff. You should see the defense get their hands on footballs, and they did. So my overall from today was, it's a pretty fair fight right now, and we've watched the last few years, Rich, mm-hmm. not fair fights. Guys wandering through the offensive line with their hand up going, someone should have blocked me. So it's been pretty fair. Phil Perry did a good job on some of the one-on-ones. He said Jared Wilson had a Joe Tooney-esque day in one-on-ones.
Ooh.
Nice.
Put down Barmore, put down Williams. He said that Campbell was much better in the one-on-ones. Notes of concern that you guys have probably already told your listeners. Gonzalez not out there. I think the hope is that that's day-to-day and not week-to-week. Garrett Bradbury got rolled on, I think, and he spent the rest of the practice out. And it looked like Morgan Moses was in a maintenance day. He left after some of the positional stuff.
Where are we at on Morgan Moses? Because that was the name we have brought up. It seemed like they were, you know, a little bit of a pitch count, which is fine for veteran guys. Some of the reporting yesterday and some of the stuff we saw from up here, he wasn't really his best when he was out there. And then today, whether it's a maintenance day or something else, like how sure can we be that he is the starting right tackle week one?
I think you can be very sure. How good is he relative to the rest of the NFL? We'll see. Is he a liability? Does he need help on occasion? I think he's going to be a good run blocker, but, you know, the matchup that he's seeing a lot is Harold Landry, who's a friggin' water bug. I mean, it's really interesting.
Well, it's funny looking at the, you're like, oh, is that a safety
who's two lined up wide?
That's a DN. He looks Landry, like a little, maybe it's the number. Maybe it's the two, but he looks like a littler guy.
He's booking, as we used to say back in the 70s around the end. He's booking. But he is, I think it's a tough matchup for Morgan Moses, but I don't think that they are sitting there going, oh my God, we have to do something about right tackle. But we'll see how that progresses. Layden Robinson was the guy who came in, I believe. No. It wasn't Layden Robinson. Who came in after him? DeMontre Jacobs.
Jacobs, right? That's what
DeMontre Jacobs was the second man up there.
Yeah, we saw a lot of Jacobs last year.
Yeah, maybe too much. I think we're seeing too much of him this year. Yeah. I know they're managing Morgan Moses, but I think we're seeing too much of him this year. So today sounded like a better day. We had read some of Phil's tweets in real time. I didn't realize he referred to it as a Tooney-esque day for Jared Wilson. A lot of the writers, Phil included, were highlighting a better day for Will Campbell, as you just detailed. Through 6 days, dialing it back, how do you feel like the offensive line has looked compared to a year ago? Your colleague, our colleague, Andy Hart, said, coming into today anyway, he actually thinks it's looked worse.
Wild take.
As an O-line this year than a year. You think it's a wild take?
Absolutely. I'm like, what, how, where, why, in what way? I mean, we would, relative to last year, it might have been one of the worst offensive lines ever assembled. We sat up here and watched that Philadelphia practice, remember?
Yeah.
And it was just chaos. Yeah, they couldn't even get the ball snapped.
Philly dominated that. Philly turns out good team, but
so,
still.
Yeah, it turns out they can play.
Yeah.
We watched the first day of padded practice yesterday and the somewhat question mark fourth overall pick, at least relative to him being the fourth overall pick, looked really good in 11-on-11. So he got ragdolled in this first time, you know, going against a superhero physique guy in Keon White. How did he play in 11-on-11s? Good. Is Jared Wilson, you know, capable? I mean, Cole Strange continues to be, in my mind, a guy who is a more than serviceable NFL starter who's been snake bitten, thus thrown in the bin of, yeah, this guy's a bust, can't play. I just don't think he is that. So I don't know why Andy said that. I don't know where he gets off. I don't know what.
How dare he?
I don't know.
First of all.
First of all, how dare you? It's that kind of wrongheadedness that is the type of thing that you're going to get from 2 to 6.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And you'll join them on Thursdays.
Yes.
You can talk to those guys, break it down on Thursdays.
You can yell at them then.
Are we to look at sort of the emergence of Chasen as like maybe this guy has found something, or is it maybe more speak to what the offensive line is? Because it seems like he's popping up all the time, like in the backfield and making a lot of plays.
First round pick,
yeah.
Formerly,
yep.
And continues to be a first round pick. You're always a first.
You always will be.
I would say that he's more carving a role than the offensive line looking like ass.
Okay.
I just don't think that they look horrendous. I don't. Interesting today, too, to veer a little bit on the content. I don't know how much you guys mentioned it earlier, but to see some of the read options, some of the stuff getting out on the edge.
I like that.
Was a nice wrinkle to see Josh McDaniels starting to feature some of the stuff that he might not have done previously, because we have heard and we have talked about that these guys keep standing in front of the mic and saying, yeah, same offense. Well, that wasn't the same.
No,
right.
Like you said, there was some option, there was some read option, there were some design runs, which is noticeable, I think, compared to some of the other days out of what we've seen. So maybe some new wrinkles in the McDaniels offense. How do you feel? Drake May, to our eyes, had been pretty strong. We weren't here on Saturday, but had been pretty strong throughout most of camp. Not a lot of throwing yesterday. Today, more throwing. It seemed like maybe a half step back for May. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it was fair compared to where he's been. Is Phil, who I always rely on, because we rely on each other's eyes, as you guys do, as everybody does with their
sure.
work colleagues.
Our eyes up here, we found, have not worked great. We're further away than we realize, and our eyes are really letting us down. So this is why we're bringing in somebody whose
That's
eyes
right.
we actually trust. Yeah.
We saw, for instance, it was a completion to Steph Diggs down in this corner of the end zone. He stepped out. You're not going to get credit
for
that.
Our bad eyes also thought he stepped out, so I'll take that.
I thought he stepped out before he even got
That's
the ball, and
then
stepped out again. Yeah.
No, he stepped out before.
Yeah.
Like, Phil. Wave it off. I gave him a couple bobble calls. But as Phil pointed out, and I thought it was really good, he goes, he made some really, really good throws, and then there was some wild misses. Nice throw to Diggs down at the other end zone that was complete, dropped it in. He also dropped one in the bucket. There was a couple of nice catches, too. One by Javon Baker, kind of going treetop in the end zone, plucking it, amassing, if you will.
Yeah, that was from Dobbs, yep.
And Jalen Polk also had, didn't count, but an absurd one-handed catch.
Yeah.
I mean, just so, okay, there's signs of life. I don't know what to, at least a fogging up the mirror, as they say.
What have you heard from some of the other players on offense about Josh McDaniels' offense, just sort of picking it up? Because we've heard there's been guys, veteran guys and rookies, that have come in here and had a really hard time with it. I know Henry and Bourne said it's similar, but those guys were also in it in 2021. A lot of new guys, including Drake May. But what has sort of been the talk amongst the offensive players about picking up, in some of these guys' cases, their third offense basically in 3 years?
I think a lot of them continue to circle back to it's he's such a good teacher.
Yeah.
And I think that he will have at some point, you know, you're going to have to accelerate so that you're catching up with the rest of the league. And I don't think they're going slowly right now, but I think they're moving fast. Look, I think the tight ends are pretty adept. I think the offensive line has a fleet of fairly sharp guys. I think the running backs are sharp. Antonio Gibson's been in the league for a long time. Stevenson's no dummy. Henderson seems sharp. It's, you know, Diggs is smart. It really depends on how do Douglas, Booty, Polk and Baker.
Kyle Williams,
who yep. I also think is pretty friggin' sharp. Jared Wilson's friggin', he's very smart.
You know what's crazy? And this came out during the draft.
And this matters, folks.
No, it does.
He's a big snake guy, Keith. I don't know if you knew that about Jared Wilson.
I did hear that.
Snake guy,
he had, like, pet snakes, right?
Yes.
He had to, like, give them up when he went to college or something.
Correct.
I was like, no thanks. No, but one of the takeaways was both the draft class and the free agency class was smart, professional guys. Like, they, like, across the board, like, really got really intelligent players. And so hopefully they can play, too. Like, that's more important than just being smart. But it seems like pretty much across the board, like, if you're asking a group of players to pick up a new offense or to even to pick up a new defense, it seems like they got the right, you know, mental capacity to do so.
Yeah, if you're looking at the 2000s Patriots and you're seeing Russ Hochstein and Tom Ashworth and Dan Copen and a bunch of guys who other teams would have looked at and said, yeah, we don't need that guy, and they win Super Bowls, it's part of the reason is they knew where to be and there weren't breakdowns. So, you know, I know that the wide receivers were not in the places they were supposed to be frequently last year. So is the coaching better? It ought to be.
Yeah.
I don't have a first-year coach, so hopefully everybody gets it. I mean, and the thing is, smart and ability to retain doesn't necessarily have to do with SATs and critical thinking.
No, oftentimes
I mean, Gronk
it's
was
the
a genius.
Yeah, right, right.
Like you played wide receiver.
Yeah,
you played receiver.
Yeah.
You played in college football.
Yeah.
Did you have an easy time with new offenses?
I mean, I didn't think it was the craziest
thing. Some guys
in the world.
Just say you'd have to go to him and go, "Oh my God, how can he not get this?" And he was otherwise.
Yeah, no, well, it wasn't that crazy. Yeah, and trust me, my SATs weren't very good.
Oh, I know.
But you're keeping a specifically close eye on the receivers. You're doing updates every day. You can check out Curran's latest at NBC Sports Boston. Follow him on Twitter at Tommy Curran. I don't know how to read the booty versus what feels like Kyle Williams battle, if you will. Like, Pop Douglas and Steph Diggs seem pretty secure, not only in their roles on the team, but in their roles maybe as starters. Bourne seems more tenuous. How does Mac Hollins factor in? Chisholm, Baker, Polk seem below that. But in terms of the guys repping the most with the top unit, I mean, it's not like Williams is getting no reps with May, but it feels like he and Booty are kind of battling for those same spots. How do you feel that battle is going? If it's even fair to characterize it as a battle.
I think it's a Booty-Bourne situation right now.
For making the team.
Yeah.
And Booty's got the leg up, it seems.
I think Booty's got the leg up because he's
although
younger.
Although Bourne gave us good dance moves in the corner. We saw a full-on dance down there. Yeah.
Good celebration.
Yeah. Oh, Javon Baker after the mossing also fired the ball well into the air.
Nice. Yeah, that was good.
I would imagine that Booty's got the leg up on Bourne. As for Williams, they're different, as you would know too, I'm sure, and they're just built differently. One guy is more blocky and strong. That's Booty. And Williams is a smaller guy, probably closer to Demario Douglas size, and is more of a he's not more of a true X. If you morphed them together, it'd be great because Booty's not tall, but he's very strong, and he's not particularly straight-line fast. Williams is straight-line fast. He's just not particularly big. So maybe they're trying to get samplings of both guys' strengths and see it. I'm sure that there should be plenty of balls for all of them. But I do think it's interesting how Booty is. He's toilet paper on the bottom of your shoe. He just will not go away. He will not go away. He's still there, and he's out there with Diggs.
And he makes plays every day.
He
I mean, like, we've noticed him every single day, yeah.
So I think I've always thought that he was pretty good.
Yeah, no, and he's, I think, in the room around him, too. He looks like he has a spot on the team. As for, like, Mac Hollins, any updates there on him? Because that's another guy, those players fighting for a wide receiver spot have a better chance if the longer Mac Hollins is out.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't have anything on Mac Hollins. I'm kind of just floating along waiting for them to say, here he is. Mm-hmm. But I am wondering where my guy E.F. Chisholm is.
Yeah, we have quiet, not, big OTAs.
Not noticed him much. I mean, he does filter in with the top team offense in May here and there.
Then he doesn't get the damn ball.
Right. Yeah. I notice him mostly, to be honest, outside of the individual drills, catching punts. That's the most I
feels like a practice
him.
Squad guy to me.
Yeah.
With the pads on, he's barely bigger than a traffic cone. I mean, I'm noticing that. So
yeah,
I had him.
That's tough.
I had him catching 171 passes in his first 2 years, and I'm going to have to reconfigure.
You're going to have to scale those back. Okay,
right, adjust fair enough.
Or they're going to try and smuggle him through to the practice squad, and they think that there's moles all over the
place. Oh, smart. Yeah, smart. Well, even if they're not at practice, maybe they're just watching on Twitch, Jones and Keefe every day, I'd imagine.
True.
That's probably where they're getting a lot of their intel. You mentioned updates on a couple of different guys. Morgan Moses, you think there's more management. You said you don't have an update on Hollins. You seemed to intimate the Patriots are hoping that Gonzalez is more day-to-day than week-to-week. We saw
that's
him out
the
here.
That's the sense I got. It wasn't like said, we're hoping day-to-day.
Right. But the sense you get, and he was here today. We saw him today kind of stroll through.
And I, he did have a wrap on the leg, like a lycra wrap, a warm-up trainer type thing. But I didn't see it. I couldn't tell if it was a swagger or a limp, so.
Okay, well, that's what we were trying to decipher, too, actually. That's the exact thing we were trying to figure out.
Pretty well. I thought maybe a little hitch in the giddy-up, but maybe he's just cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Maybe he just got some cool swagger. What are you hearing on Carlton Davis? Because I know he was here off to the side. He's not out there,
absent again.
What's up with that?
Colton, and I just started swiveling my head.
I thought I heard Carlton.
Sorry. Yeah.
I love when you guys gang up on me. it was Colton.
Clip that, Nick. Yeah.
And our guy was out there for a walkthrough last night. When they do a late afternoon walkthrough, I happen to see him moving along with the rest of the group. And then I did see him as I was entering the stadium today, leaving on a golf cart, but not in any kind of disrepair. So I'm guessing he was on the lower field or the rehab field. And he was being brought in from there. But I don't know what his timeline is either. It was supposed to be management. It's still July. I would be, if I were the Patriots or a Patriots fan, I would say I'd really like to see those guys on the field against Washington next week. I'd really like to see us be able to put our team on the field against the Commanders to get a sense of what we're going to look like.
And
so,
just for clarity, those guys are Gonzalez and Davis, or who are you talking about?
Gonzalez, Davis. You want to Moses. Put your full complement on the field. Next Wednesday will be the joint practice with the Manders.
I'm excited for that. To see Jaden Daniels on the field and Drake May. And like it's Jaden Daniels had the great rookie year, but that's a fair comparison. I mean, it's the number two pick, number three pick. See what those guys could do head-to-head. Good challenge for both. What has been your take so far of just Mike Vrabel running the show? Jones and I were talking about yesterday anyway. He was really seeming to be with the offense even more than anybody else. What have you thought of just how he's been running this whole thing so far?
It seems it remains the same as it was in the offseason. Very organized, very to the point. You ask him a question, he gives a considered answer that is some gives you some illumination. I think he enjoys talking about the mindset of things, which I enjoy, because sometimes you can't get into too much specifics. They haven't done really very much, and still they're not doing very much. You know, I asked him yesterday, what would you look for if you were in the media? And I thought it was an interesting answer because, you know, we do have a tendency to say, oh, my God, that guy got blown up in one-on-ones. And
some are saying it's the worst offensive line they've ever seen.
Some are saying.
No, but you got a good answer out of him. He said, watch everybody's balance. And
he also
and
said
see
he'd never do media.
Well,
with Curran, there's no way that's
true. Garbage.
You'll do it at
You
some
called
point.
Him on that properly, yeah. Curran. But he gave you a good answer. He's like, well, watch when the linemen are there, offensive and defensive linemen. Watch if they keep their feet. And then the first thing we see with Will Campbell yesterday is he gets knocked off his feet.
Yep.
And so, no, I thought that was an interesting answer.
I do think I should say this, though, relative to Vrabel. I think he did a great job assembling a staff because he doesn't have to be all over the place doing cartwheels and saying, you know, look at me, it's Mike Vrabel's day.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it frees him up to be mostly, at least from what we've seen, with that offensive side of the field when they break down into the two separate groups. He's largely over there. Anybody down the roster that's jumped out to you? I know one name that we've noticed a lot of the beat writers have highlighted is DJ James, the young corner. Anybody that's kind of caught your eye in that vein?
I'll be really honest. I'm really focused on the starters to a large extent, to the point where when Ben Woodridge or Dobbs comes in, sometimes I'm looking down and trying to get what the ones had done.
Yeah.
And trying to process. So I wish I could come up with someone. Chason has been... You mentioned him, a guy that was omnipresent during minicamp, and he's out there a lot now. I think the second kicker, Parker Romo. I mean, I'm digging now, but he was good yesterday, and little Andy Borregales bounced back today with
nice.
A number of good kicks. Of course, Phil goes, that might have been the least impressive 6-on-6 I've seen.
You guys are not sold on him.
I'm like, Phil, he just can't win you over, huh?
No, I guess not. 6-for-6, pretty good. I don't know how closely you followed the Christian Wilkins situation.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Vrabel was asked about it not long ago, and he was like, yeah, we'll take a look at it. But then since then, we found out that it's much more than just like how he was rehabbing his foot. He may have also been grabbing feet of teammates, maybe giving a little smooch, something along those lines. Knowing what we know, should the Patriots have interest in a guy who was a very productive NFL player? He's still 29 years old, and at this point, I'm guessing won't cost you a ton of money.
No.
Well, it's always worth vetting how a guy would fit into your locker room. Maybe the fellas like that kind of tomfoolery. You know?
They have a bunch of guys who overlap with him a year ago. They have
Robert Splend. You can ask him.
Keep brought this up. They have a bunch of ex-Raiders.
So, you know, they could probably – well, no, Josh wasn't there. I would say until you've done something with your $60 million worth of cap space, then you should continue browsing. Williams, Barmore, Tonga, Landry, White, I'm missing somebody, even old Penny Jennings. You got a nice
Barmore
front.
Barmore.
Yeah. I did a good job with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if Christian Wilkins is going to be a $15 or $20 million guy, I would say, yeah, you know what? You probably don't need that. That's a luxury item.
He might need a 1 year of like rehab deal. He might need to just come back on the field, show that he can, you know, be a good teammate, as it were, and then go from there. Maybe cash in next year. Yeah,
maybe,
I guess.
Maybe be less affectionate.
Perhaps.
Well, you know, it was a playful kiss on the head is what it was.
I guess.
As reported by Adam Schefter. He's Tommy Curran. You can check out all his latest NBC Sports Boston. Follow him on Twitter at Tom E. Curran. Of course, all over WEEI as well. Tuesdays with Jones and Keefe. On Thursday, you can yell at Andy Hart for his takes on the offensive line and check all that out on the Odyssey app. Tom, good stuff as always. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll get back to your phone call, 617-779-7937. That's how you jump in line for WEEI Afternoons. You got Hart. You got Fitzy. You got Ted. And another TED Talk live from Patriots training camp. We also have the clip du jour on the way. And right after trending with Billy Lanny, it's time for Grab Bag.
WEEI Afternoons, Wrongheadedness Radio, according to Tom Curtis.
Where does he get off?
And Tom Curran will join Wrongheaded Radio right now. Drains by James is Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Tom Curran, you didn't care for my concerns about the offensive line, I take it?
Well, I need them to be delivered firsthand.
Okay.
Because they were delivered in a way that made it sound like you think they're worse than last year. And that can't be a fact.
He does.
I think they could be worse than last year because Morgan Moses has concerned me for the start of camp here. His inability to block the little speedy guys off the edge, Chasen and Landry. You don't have David Andrews as a mainstay in the middle, and you've kind of had some moving pieces there, Bradberry or this Jared Wilson phenom thing. You basically, compared to last year, all you have is Mike Onwenu. Everybody else is new. You got this fancy, shiny left tackle that we want to love, but people have concerns about, A, his arm length and all that, but also his ability to block. And now it looks like you're going to start two rookies right out the gates on the left side there. And I'm already seeing reps from guys like DeMontre Jacobs and other questionable talents who at least waited until later in the season before they were relevant last year.
So you're alleging that the guys who were playing last year from that offensive line that could be better than this one are not great options. This is an offensive line that had Vedarian Lowe at left tackle, nice guy, not a really top-tier football player, that a revolving door at left guard. David Andrews played four games. Onwenu was just off all season. And Layden Robinson and a cavalcade of average or below average at right tackle. Where do you get off?
Well, because I think it's very similar.
With overall pick.
I mean, what are you excited about?
A better offensive line?
Yeah. Like, other than Doug Marrone, I think the one known commodity that gives me confidence this line will be better.
I mean, I'm excited about one of the best tackles in college football being here. I mean, personally, excited I'm optimistic. Personally, I don't get excited, but I would say that if you're a Patriots fan, you should be encouraged by the fact that a guy who was taken fourth overall, that the entire planet agrees was, worthy of being a first rounder, is playing left tackle after the subpar nature of the position for years, that this kid Jared Wilson is locking down really good, talented players in training camp like Barmore and Milton Williams, that if it's not Bradberry, who probably is generally more durable than David Andrews, unfortunately for David last year, on when it was better, Moses is, certainly worthy of concern. But he's a better player than DeMontre Jacobs or Layden Robinson. So I just don't – there's a lot of stuff to manufacture nervousness about. The offensive line seems a really loose branch to bounce up and down on.
Okay. I mean, we don't need to belittle this. The one thing I would say, I've never manufactured an opinion in my life. I don't do that.
That's not your thing.
If I react, it's because I saw something on the field and started to look at it with sort of a certain lens, and that's how I feel.
Andy,
I think it could be worse. Yeah, I really do. I think you're starting at a spot that is similar to last year and could spiral in a bad direction. But we can move on.
We're gonna put that on our shoulder, and we'll get back to that.
We'll talk to you again in like October.
There you go. Let's revisit in October. Hey, Tom. You clearly remember because you go to every single practice. In the first day of OTAs, Drake May, I feel like he had like four interceptions in that first practice, and so far, in the last eight practices and training camp, he has no turnovers. Why such the dramatic improvement from then to now?
I think part of it, and they were picks. He deserved to have them called picks. I think luck is on his side right now, and bad luck was on his side on that day that he had the four picks. He could have gotten picked by Jabril Peppers, but I also think that I don't have a really good explanation for it. because he's not taking check down after check down. He's throwing it to tight windows. He's throwing it to every single player that he could, whether it be Baker or Polk when they're out there, or Efton Chisholm, whether it be rookie Kyle Williams. Could we say maybe, possibly, that the corners are not dealing with this competent but not great group of wide receivers? I think that would be a stretch, too. I guess we eventually have to just say he's playing really good. To me, that's the Occam's razor answer. He's playing really good. So it is kind of stunning when you think about the high-leverage throws that he has made and put in there. And, Andy, I do want to say, because I feel bad about saying manufactured. I was still joking, but not with my joking voice because I'm a little tired in the mid-afternoon. So no sorry worries. I said manufactured. No, definitely worries, and I can tell in the no worries answer that tone that you have when you're really pissed.
I was going to fire back, but I chose not to. Yeah. I had a retort that would have elevated our anger here in our argument. So we'll just pass it along
to
Vincent.
He'll be okay. He loves your time. He'll be all right.
All right.
Everything's good.
I backed it off there. I did what I could. You know, I put my hand out across the aisle there.
I just feel like the kid in the back of the station wagon when the family's arguing up front, but that's fine. And you remember those good old days, Tommy. And from the back of the station wagon, I do want to bring up something I believe we can all agree is a legitimate concern, and that's cornerback depth. So now when you've got a load management sort of possibly injured Carlton Davis and you got a soft tissue injury early on with the hammy on Gonzo, are you a little worried, Tom, that, maybe we could be seeing meaningful reps from like the Isaiah Boldens and the Marcellus Dials down the line? Because that's not great.
No, we don't definitely know that's not great, but we certainly know it's not as great as having the guys out there that you
– right.
Have already spent money on and are going to spend an immense amount of money on.
Fair
so
enough, yes.
It's going from being like, you know, even conceivably a top five cornerback duo, at least top 10, mm-hmm. to 28th. If you have Marcellus Dial, Marcus Jones, and Alex Austin running around out there. So, yeah, it's definitely a concern, especially with every team being loaded at wide receiver that the Patriots have to deal with. So, that is a place that I would look at, and we're batting this around as the Patriots near their situation where they have to make some cuts, and we're probably going to discuss wide receivers, but they have a glut of competent but not great wide receivers who may become expendable. So do you look at a guy like Kendrick Bourne and say, you know, this guy might have some relevance someplace else, and we're going to have to release him because he doesn't play special teams. Maybe we can get a depth tackle. Maybe we can get a depth corner.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy like this. So to me, I think that's where Elliot Wolf, Ryan Cowden, and the rest of the personnel department has to start looking. Where are we really shallow? And I'd throw tight end in there too.
Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, with us here on WEEI Afternoons, and he has a good crystal ball because I was planning on going to the wide receiver position next. And Tom, if the offensive line doesn't blow up in our faces, I've seen some things from the wide receiver position, and some of it might be expectation-based, that the expectations are low, but I've seen some things that I kind of like. It's not hard for me to talk myself into Stephon Diggs, Pop Douglas, and Kayshon Booty with a little Kyle Williams mixed in. That sounds like it might be a decent wide receiver core to me.
I think they could be worse than last year.
Oh, you son of a gun.
Way to go, son of a gun.
No, I agree with you. I mean, and it'll be an offense too that is reminiscent of what we saw. I really think that Douglas is going to be the straw that stirs the drink. As much as Diggs is going to be a player that you're looking to frequently, and he'll be the guy who would get you on a great week a 6-catch 130-yard day if the Patriots end up having an NFL level offense this year. I do think that Douglas will be the player that defense is like, this guy on third down. They're always moving him around. They're always running him across the middle. They're always, you know, putting him in difficult places that stress us. So I really think that Douglas could be a big part of that offense. And it's funny you mentioned Booty. He just won't go away. Mm-hmm. He will not go away. And he catches everything. He blocks well downfield, as does Kyle Williams. So there is great reason for optimism that it should be an offense, and I keep saying this year after year, you got to score 24 friggin' points. And that's not a lot. I mean, Detroit scored 33 last year. Great offense, great coaching on that offense. But 24 points a game is not insane. Mm-hmm. You got to get to that point.
I couldn't agree more, Tom. And we hit the offensive line, the quarterback, the wide receivers. Why not? Let's just go for the last question for me, at least in the running backs. I mean, I look out there, and it just feels like there's obviously going to be a lot of checkdowns with Josh McDaniels. But you just see plays designed to get to the edge. You see a lot of creative screens. You see Travion Henderson, you know, running to the goalpost, hitting his head on the goalpost. How involved do you think this running back group's going to be? How does Ramondre Stevenson look? Just this group overall. What do you think of the profile of the running back position?
It's really interesting because they are reminiscent of the way the Patriots used to try to construct their running back room back in, you know, their last Super Bowl run and ones prior. Sony Michel was your lead back. Rex Burkhead was your versatile changeup back, could go between the tackles or he could be a third down type. And then you had James White. This would follow the same suit with Ramondre Stevenson being your bell cow, Antonio Gibson being your you know, back and forth versatile back, but also kind of could carry the ball 15, 16 times. And I think Travion Henderson's early role would be kind of third down backish, but he could be like Rex Burkhead as well. So there's great versatility with all three backs. And as we know with running backs, somebody's going to get a ding at some point, so you're going to need all three. I'll be interested, too, to see if I always call him Lan Larrigan, and that's not his name.
Number 34 from UC Davis.
Yep.
That's my guy.
Yeah, it's not Larrigan. It's not Larrigan.
Larrison.
Is it?
Larrison.
Larrison.
Every friggin' time.
Yep.
Lan Larrison.
Yep.
Will have pertinence on this team. I would not be surprised he makes the 53.
Yep.
As a kick returner and special teamer, just so you have some depth. And again, it's so friggin' maddening when you look at recent years. Why couldn't Pete Strong stay here? Why couldn't Kevin Harris stay here? Why were these guys who they drafted, Pierre Strong was an earlier pick, but they just were unusable. It's like City So. I think he's still on the team. I never see him. He was a starter 2 years ago. It's wild.
Yeah, Tom, last question for me real quick. I was making a point earlier, and yes, I think Lan Larrison, I think he was the leader in receptions for running backs last year in college football as well. So hopefully he makes a good impact. And just overall, I think the impact I'm most impressed by still is Coach Vrabel. And I was remarking earlier to the guys about how everything seems so much more positive down there. Am I crazy thinking that like the positivity down there begins with the energy displayed by the head coach and his competence?
I think it's not just the energy. I think the energy flows from a notion of competence and purpose everywhere. If you go someplace and you're not sure who the offensive line coach is, or how the offensive coordinator will do, or you're looking at a first-year defensive coordinator and a first-year head coach, and it's already been announced that it's a foundational year, and the owner is saying, I hope we don't struggle, but we might struggle. That really does not put a lot of energy and hop in your step. But when you look at an offense right now that has head coaches and former head coaches and interim head coaches all over it and talented players imported and a guy who's in his second go-around after having had a year off to prepare for the second go-around, there's no way that everybody can't feel as if they've done an immense amount in the offseason to prepare for 2025, whereas 2024 was very much flying by the seat of your pants, and 2023 was just hoping against hope that the worst was not going to unfold, and it did. So I think it's probably relative. I think the confidence and enthusiasm is probably relative to what we've seen really since 2022. I mean, that whole offseason, too, we're going to go with no offensive coordinator. We'll figure it out as we go. So 2021 was kind of fun. And it's been 3 years since we've seen anything remotely close to it. So it's like getting outside for your hour of time out in the yard.
Tom, real quick, before we let you go, are we expecting maybe a return to sort of the blue-white scrimmage tomorrow night at Gillette Stadium? It's been a few years since we had one of those. Is this going to be a competitive practice tomorrow night?
That's a good question. They had the walkthrough today.
Yeah.
They're going to have Saturday and Sunday off, so that's a great question. And the Senator Phil Perry also wonders the same thing. Ooh. He's not going to give him 2 days off in a row where they're not doing anything on 2 days off, is he? Ted, what do you think?
Nope. That is not. Ooh. No, Michael's harder than that. He's not as soft like that.
Mm-mm. All right, I'll take whichever team has Drake May as their quarterback. But we'll talk to you about it next week, Tom Carney. Keep an eye on that offensive line so we can continue our argument.
Thanks, Tom.
Oh, we will.
See you, buddy.
Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, with all his thoughts from Patriots training camp. We'll touch on that, including the running back position, where Fitzy got very excited to hear he and Tom Curran think there is a dark horse candidate to be in the backfield this year. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Still plenty of time to leave a Hill Note on any topic, whether it is something that we have discussed or something that we have not. And you can do that on the Odyssey app. You will see the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and leave a voice note. And we'll play the best ones back coming up next hour at about 9:20. We should open up the window world of Boston WEEI weather window on what I guess is the final day of this little mini heat wave we've had here. Curtis, if you could poke your head outside and give us the forecast.
All right. It already feels like 86 in Boston. It is a hot one out there. It's going to be up to 92, real feel in the mid-90s. But tomorrow it is going to cool off significantly, going to be cloudy skies with highs of 78 in the city of Boston. Friday morning at the Tipsy Seagull in Fall River, could be dodging some raindrops and highs are in temperature in the upper 60s on Friday morning.
Yeah, we're doing a Flex Friday show back at the Tipsy Seagull, which is a great place on the water in Fall River. Cannot wait to see all of you. Place was jammed last year when we did it, so I'm hoping that you're all coming out on Friday morning, hang out with us. And then Saturday they do a really incredible annual charity event, and they all get in their really fast boats and do a poker run all around that area and over in Newport and Jamestown. And that event this year benefits the Greg Hill Foundation. And so thanks to those guys down there for that. And can't wait for that on Saturday as well, although I will not be going in the boat on Saturday. Tried that last year, terrified me. So I will be watching from the shore, waving hello. Hello, sailor.
That's smart.
And
we all got our fix of that, and yeah. I think we're good.
Oh, Wiggy will never, I don't think, ever go on a boat like that.
No. Hell no.
You guys did. How fast did you go on that thing?
Like 130?
Yeah. 130 yeah. miles per hour.
Honestly,
or
doing
nautical miles per hour, whatever it is. Knots.
Doing that was faster, but not as scary as the boat we took after to Newport. I was more scared because that was more open. Like we were sitting and ours was kind of covered on the top.
Oh, Mike's boat when we went to lunch that was the day before, right?
That was on Friday. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And that scared me.
I am boating today. I'm a passenger. I like the party boats. What do they call those things?
The tiki boats, if you will, on the lake.
The pontoon, as Chris said. That's more my.
The speed. Ones at Lake Winnipesaukee.
Yeah, yep. I like those.
Nice and slow.
I don't need to be going, 130 miles.
Anchor me right around the sandbar.
Yeah,
and we ain't even got to go nowhere.
Anchor the boat or anchor you.
The boat and me. Okay. Anchor me right there. We ain't got to go anywhere. We can enjoy it right there.
You've really become a lake guy. All it took was one trip to Winnipesaukee, and you're a lake guy.
Well, because the sandbar thing is so cool. Like, and you can't do that in the ocean. People say you can, but I've never seen it. Where?
You can. There are sandbars in the ocean. There are.
Miami.
Nantucket.
Yeah.
Miami has a great sandbar.
That you can pack a bunch of boats around it.
Oh, well, not boats, but you can go swim at. Like, you can go stand out there, float out there.
No, I'm talking about.
But you weren't even on a boat. You were just on the sandbar. You were enjoying
your
time.
Right, but there was, you could have, 40, 50 boats around this sandbar, chilling. Going from different boats. Like,
I believe Greg's friends used to do a big 4th of July party down the Cape at a sandbar, right?
Yeah,
with all their boats.
Like an island.
Yeah.
That's more of an island.
That's
than
an
a
island,
sandbar,
though. It's not a sandbar.
Well, right, because there's tides in the ocean. The sandbar goes away and comes back.
Yeah. See, so you can literally just all day long just be out there chilling and having a great
time. Some could say an island is just a massive sandbar.
I don't know if anybody would say that or not. Yeah.
Some could.
Not quite.
I think, Scheim had that as a lead last week, I think.
I did, thanks, yeah.
All right, let's get to the Curtis Camp query of the day. Curtis?
All right, so offense is on my mind. I am very interested to see what Josh McDaniels does. Quick statistical breakdown of the Patriots since the GOAT left. The only offensive season that was halfway decent was 2021. They averaged 27.2 points per game. Last year, they averaged 17. In 2023, they averaged less than 14. If the Patriots are successful on offense this year, why will it be? And if they fail, who will you blame? Two-sided. Do you believe the Patriots can get back to the Mac Jones season? Just answering the question first before everybody. I believe if they are not better than 27 points a game the 2021 Patriots season, it is a failure. And if they do not, I will not blame Josh McDaniels. I will blame Drake May.
I think that I would blame, I'd be more likely to put the blame on Drake May than I would on Josh McDaniels. Although I would ask Wiggy this, how similar do you think this offense will be to that, you know, Josh McDaniels, like that offense that is his offense with Mac Jones?
I think it'll be very similar with the nuances or the kind of like add-ons will be the ability that Drake May has to run the football.
Right.
So you'll add in the RPOs. You didn't really do that with Mac Jones. You'll have the ability for Drake May some design run plays. You put him maybe more on the move because of his athletic ability. So I think it's still going to be the same offense, you know, the same offensive foundation that I was in, that Brady was in, that Mac Jones was in, just with a little bit different of a sprinkle because
you're
of Drake
May. You're not
May.
One who goes into a complete panic if they're actually designing runs for their quarterback.
No.
Like, God forbid you do that.
Utilize that.
Yeah, but Drake has said he doesn't want to rush as much as he did last year.
And I would say, listen, we're not going to rush you a ton, but we're going to utilize your skill set.
I will also say, Curtis, I think a step towards a successful season next year, you have to have a receiver that has over 1,000 yards. The last receiver that we had that recorded 1,000 yard was Julian Edelman, 2019. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a drought that's insane. If you look at the last 6 years and you don't have a single receiver on the Patriots that has reached that, that's the first step.
So
you would say maybe Steph Diggs would be the reason they're successful this year if he could do that.
If they're successful this year, it's because of Drake May offensively. And if they're not, it's going to be because of Drake May. Right? When you look
Shine might blame the offensive line. He might put it on Moses.
Well, I think Shine would lean more towards it being Josh McDaniels' fault if they're not successful.
Well, I think it has to. It depends how it looks, Greg. Like, you can't just. It's hard to prognosticate exactly how the offensive season's going to go, because I think asking for 27 points a game means you're asking for them to be a top 10 offense in football, which I think is a very big ask. Like, I would like to be inside of the top half. So you have to be 15th or better in terms of total offense. Like, that to me is a successful offensive season. If you're not, then yeah, there's a lot of questions about Drake May. I don't disagree with that.
I mean, look at 2021 in this season. At every position outside of right tackle, center, and guard, they're better. They're as good or better at tight end. They're as good or better at running back. They're much better at receiver. And they, according to Scheim, should be exponentially better at the most important position, quarterback.
Yeah, but you also have to look back at that 21 team and remember that they had a top, like, three defense in all of football, Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right, a lot of that
points number was inflated because they had, what, 250-point games against dogwater teams?
Right. The most important position was occupied by someone you believe to be a moron.
Correct. And he sucked, and he proved that.
Well, okay, so if you can do that, maybe the defense doesn't have to be top three. Maybe the defense can just be top 10, and you have a quarterback that's actually good that can balance that out and get you back to 27.
Yeah, I mean, statistically, Shime's talking about the defense being responsible for a lot of those points in Mac Jones' season.
Yeah, the defense helped a ton.
That's what you're arguing.
I think they were number two in the league in turnovers that year. Like, that defense was insanely talented.
Right,
put you in positions to score points really fast and really easily.
I could see the points theory, right? I could see what Shime's saying based on points. Are you getting short fields? Are some of those points coming off of pick sixes or those type of things? I could see what Shime's saying.
But look at all the money they invested in their defense this offseason. The defense should be a top 10 defense.
Yeah, the defense should be good. Your offense should look like the thing about the offense in 2021, And, you know, and whether you were a Mac Jones fan or you weren't, I wasn't a Mac Jones fan. The offense, for the most part, looked capable. It looked like a real offense. It wasn't this high-flying offense that scored a ton of points where you're like, okay, this is why they score points, because Mac is throwing the ball all over the field. He did a good job. He was a guy that, you know, made the right decisions. They ran the ball well. And so when you look at this year's team, I think they're going to put more on Drake May's plate. And they're going to, so when it, the success is going to come offensively for what Drake May is able to do or not do. And if he's not able to go out there and elevate, make plays, then we're going to put it on Drake May. If he's able to go out there and make plays, then we're obviously going to give him the credit. So I think it squarely falls on the shoulders of Drake May when it comes to the success of this team offensively.
I just am curious about the Pats fan and their patience with McDaniels and allowing this offense to develop with Drake May this year, because I believe them to be a playoff team. The Dolphins just lost one of their corners in an already sort of a weak position point. They just got a guy out for the season, according to Rap Sheet this morning.
Coder Kohu.
The division is ripe for the taking, and I think the Patriots are more talented than the Dolphins and more talented than the Jets. I don't think they're more talented than the Bills.
Right.
But I do love the fact that you have Steph Diggs going up against his old team twice. He seems like a guy that rises to those occasions. The excuses should not be there. The defense should be much better. And it has Vrabel and all the guys they brought in. And the offense should have a second-year jump from Drake May with McDaniels and Steph Diggs, not to mention one of the guys, whether it's Pop Douglas or the shoeless guy, who knows. You have Hunter Henry back at tight end. Like, they should be good.
Also, you'll find out if the philosophy, and it must have been Elliott Wolf's or Robert Kraft's, because it wasn't Gerard Mayo's, but the philosophy of letting Drake May sit for a good part of that season, that should pay off this year if that was the right way to do it, correct?
Yeah, I'm always under the impression the more real snaps you get.
No, I understand that. But that's what Gerard Mayo wanted, clearly, because he said it on this show. But they, you know, whoever was driving that internally, if they are correct, then that should work in Drake May's favor.
Yeah, if they believe in the theory that they're pushing, where it's like, oh, we're not going to rush this guy in.
Yeah.
But I'm not one that believes in that theory. I'm one that believes in, I want to see my guy go out there and either he can sink or he can swim. And if it looks like he can swim, then we can build off of that, right? Then we get a good offensive coordinator in here like Josh McDaniels. This team, when you look at this Patriots football team this year, I still think Buffalo is the leader in the division. Obviously, because of Josh Allen. They don't have that legit number one, but Josh Allen has enough talent to elevate everybody and get guys involved in that passing game. If you're not successful, then Drake May hasn't been able to make that jump and turn the corner. We're going to be questioning him, and then we're going to be questioning Mike Vrabel and his coaching approach. Because if you're losing games, well, what's going on defensively? On paper, you should be good, but if defensively you're not doing, Mike, what's going on with the defense here you're coaching? Do we got to change the coordinator? Is it the game plan? What's going on?
So in that order, you're going to question Drake May first, and then you're going to question Mike Vrabel. Josh McDaniels is really third to answer Curtis's question.
Yeah.
This is Robbie in the car. Robbie, what's up?
Hey, guys. First time, long time.
Thank you.
I'm just curious, like, if Curtis thinks that even if the Pats have, like, 22 points per game average, but have 11 wins because we control the ball and have a really good defense, would you still blame people in that? And then I'll hang up and listen. Yeah.
No, I mean, if you win 11 games, I don't think there'll be a lot of negativity going around. There's obviously, that means that Drake May wasn't losing you games. he wasn't throwing backbreaking picks or doing dumb things with the football.
Which is probably the most important thing, right?
Like, of course.
At the end of the day, it comes down, to be honest, the best stat for Drake May this season is going to be touchdowns to interceptions. Because if he throws 20 touchdowns but only throws 7 picks and you win 10 or 11 mm-hmm. games, everybody's going to be fine. But if, and again, to the opposite side, like if he throws 40 touchdowns and 12 picks, but you only won 7 games, people are still going to be unhappy because you didn't win more games.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big stat for anybody is wins, and he won 1 game last year. So if he wins 11 this year, I don't care if they do it running the ball every play.
They're not going to win 11 games this year.
Well, like, I bet it's more likely they win 11 than Shime saying less than 6.
But I see, Shime,
I never said less than 6. Man, we keep going lower and lower, guys.
I think nine is a very fair number.
Yeah, nine is only
to expect. Yeah. I think it's fair to expect 9.
You have settled it on Greg's fence very well. I mean, Ordway's fence. Yeah.
If they do what you said, Shime, and you said Drake May's thrown 40 touchdowns and 11 interceptions, 12 interceptions. Is that what you said?
Yeah, and they're like a below 500 team.
And then I think he's looked more like Justin Herbert, where it's not Drake May, it could be the coach.
Well, yeah. So Wiggy, I think your analysis of the process, like the people you're going to look at first, mm-hmm. is correct. Like it's going to go Drake May, Mike Vrabel, then Josh McDaniels, because if May is playing really good, but they're still losing games, clearly the defense is bad. Like, if you go out and you lose 30-27 to the Raiders in week one, that's probably not because, if you score 27 points, it's not because Drake May is playing poorly. It's because the defense is bad.
He becomes Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
With the Chargers. Puts up the good numbers, and you're like, what's going on? And then you're like, well, he doesn't have the right coach. Then he gets the coach and Jim Harbaugh. And look how it changes.
But minus Steph Diggs, does Drake May have the right weapons to be able to do that? I mean, depending on who ends up being in that wide receiver room.
To me, it's more the offensive line than it is like the weapons. Like, it's just, if they give him 5 seconds, then yeah, he should be able to complete passes to Pop Douglas, Kyle Williams, Stephon Diggs, Hunter Henry, you name, or run himself. Like, but if he's getting, you know, bull rushed by Max Crosby on every single play in week one, there's only so much you could do.
Because you think about Justin Herbert, when he's had some of those pretty decent seasons.
What if they signed the tickler, put him on the offensive line to scare defenders?
Yeah, they could do that. He didn't have, like his weapons were good, but they weren't, like, elite. He had Keenan Allen, who was a little bit older, Mike Williams, who was up and down. Who else did the Chargers have? They have
Quentin Johnston, who can't catch a football.
Right. So Justin Herbert, when you look at his numbers, he never had like that legit guy. So I think Drake May can kind of be in that type of statistical world, and the team not do well, where you go, oh, we have the quarterback, but what's the other pieces?
Curtis, good one today.
Thank you.
Curtis, camp query of the day. And coming up, Hill Notes at 9:20. Leave one now. We'll be right back.
High noon, Jones and Keefe live at Patriots training camp. For day 8, we've been here throughout camp. We are brought to you by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on. McFarland Energy.com will go on the clock, catch up to speed in just 60 seconds, what you've missed through 8 days at Patriots training camp. We go on the clock every Thursday at high noon, recap something in 60 seconds. That's what we'll do today. Drake May, through 8 days of camp, Keith, and 6 real practices, has not thrown an interception. He mentioned there Peppers could have had one.
Yeah, Peppers
on the first day.
Yep.
And he's joked around about that, says he's not afraid to throw them. But one of the things we want to see out of Drake May in year two, manage the turnovers, the wind should follow. I mean, he's put a couple of snaps on the ground when it came to exchanges with Bradbury and a couple with Wilson, but he hasn't thrown a pick yet. That's a good story.
Nope, that is definitely a good story, especially because we feel like this is a pretty good defense, right? Like, we've gone over all the different position groups and how they rank in the NFL and everything else. Overall, it is a good defense. Now, some of that comes with, unfortunately, not a ton of Christian Gonzalez, not a ton of Carlton Davis. So there is that, too. But as far as, like, the rush that's getting there, as far as, you know, the linebackers and even the safeties, like, it's a pretty good group for him to be practicing against. And, no, one of my big takeaways is he has been very solid. Like, he has been solid. He's made a few flashy plays. They're definitely looking to see if he'll run a little bit. Not that they're doing a ton of that in some of the 11-on-11s, but just from those guys talking about it and some of the plays that we've seen. So I would say it's been a very, very solid camp for Drake May.
Okay. You can discuss the Patriots, 617-779-7937, if you'd like. Very light day today. More of a walkthrough. Only a few players even in helmets. Never mind full-blown pads. So they will be inside the stadium tomorrow for season ticket holders. I think they get the weekend off. And then we're back here next Monday through Wednesday at training camp leading up to joint practices against the Commanders and the first preseason game, Keith.
Yes.
A week from tomorrow.
Oof.
Where they'll unveil the Brady statue.
Yeah, that too. Statue night.
We talked about that earlier. If you missed any of it, Audacy app, AUDACY. Get it on your phone. Free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. You can also listen on the iHeartRadio and tune in apps as well. Lots of ways to listen to Jones and Keefe here on Trade Deadline Day.
I know. And there's been some moves. There's been some activity.
Oh, do we need to go to the desk?
No, yes. I'm just saying for people joining us now.
Yes.
People joining us now.
Got it.
There have been some moves. The deadline for some ungodly reason is 6 p.m., so it's well after we get off the air. However, last night there were trades. The Mariners have been busy. Closers have been changing teams.
Yeah,
the Red Sox have been quiet.
The big one today, yeah. Mason Miller goes to the Padres. He's the closer for the A's. He's young. He's cost-controlled. They give up the number three prospect by some measures in baseball. So I assumed, Keith, that meant that the Padres would be looking to buy. They wouldn't be trading off Dylan Cease, Robert Suarez, names like this. I was wrong.
Okay.
Buster Olney, the Padres have had extensive talks with the Red Sox about Jaron Duran.
Oh, my God.
The Red Sox keep saying no.
Let it go, Padres.
And with the Guardians about your guy, Stephen Kwan.
He's good.
Some rival execs fully expect the Padres to land one of those two by day's end. That's what Buster Olney says.
Well, they've heated up a little bit combined with Rafael Devers tanking the Giants. They are a playoff team right now. So a couple of weeks ago, the conversation was very different. For the Padres, they might have been thinking about Jaron Duran sort of for the future and being willing to move on from some of their pitchers. But now they're probably looking at, like, all right, we're going to buy. They just added Mason Miller. If they can add an outfielder leadoff hitter type like Kwan or Duran, they probably feel like they got as good a chance as anybody out there.
Let me give you a little more on this. This is Dennis Lynn, covers the Padres out in San Diego. He says, by most indications, San Diego still has not stopped trying on a pair of top outfield targets, Duran and Kwan, same names. To acquire either player, however, they may need to trade starter Dylan Cease or incumbent closer Robert Suarez, not to be confused with Eugenio Suarez, who went to the Mariners, and perhaps flip the resulting prospect capital to Boston or Cleveland. So wait a minute. They're going to trade Dylan Cease to somebody else and then use the prospects they got for Dylan Cease to get Duran?
Yeah, it's like an NBA three-team trade.
So that would suck. I mean,
you asked earlier best-case scenario, and I laid it out. Ryan, Yandy Diaz, that kind of thing.
Worst-case scenario, Duran for prospects?
100%.
I was about to say doing nothing, but you're right. That's way worse.
No, that's worse.
Selling for prospects would be worse than doing nothing, which right now is just acquiring Steven Matz. Maybe helps, maybe not, but it's a minor move that they made overnight.
Doing nothing is frustrating.
Worst-case scenario would be that. They trade C somewhere else. They get prospects, and then they use those prospects, pull them together for Jaron Duran. I don't want prospects for Duran. I don't even want to trade him. Never mind for prospects.
It really doesn't feel likely, though. Like, talking to Rob Bradford, don't you feel like Jaron Duran's not going anywhere?
I do.
And one of the main reasons, and this they might have backed into this, if Marcelo Meyer was healthy and hitting, maybe they are dumb enough to trade him. Maybe they're like, Duran. But now that all of their outfielders are playing every day because Rafael is playing second base, I think they feel like they have to have him. Plus, it doesn't hurt that Duran is on a little bit of a tear right now. They seem to have found a new spot for him in the lineup. So I think he's going to be here. My prediction is he does not get traded today. Now, the offseason, different story, but we're talking about today.
So I would agree. John Heyman maybe will make you feel a little bit better about this. He says if the Padres can't get Stephen Kwan, they'll look to Laureano, who I know used to be with the A's. Where is he now? Baltimore?
He's still in baseball?
Yeah, I guess. And Luis Robert, to fill a need. That's in Chicago. He's having a very bad year. So Heyman says their pivot would be not to Duran. Their pivot would be further down the list if you want to put stock in what he had to say. One more item here. This is also from John Heyman. Teams in on Sandy, I thought it was Alcantara. What did Bradford say? Alcantara?
Alcantara. I thought it was Alcantara, too.
Like the video game?
Alcantara, up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, start, select.
You know, not the
first
time.
That's his nickname?
Not the first time. to go to
every time he pitches.
Check,
like,
check the baseball reference page real quick. Yeah. So regardless of pronunciation, wouldn't be the first time I butchered it. John Heyman says the teams in are the Astros, the Cubs, the Yankees, and the Red Sox.
So
and
this has to be a little concerning for everybody that the Red Sox, who used to be the interest kings, who would make fun of, you know, the Heim Bloom off seasons for being so close, and even Breslow, you know, this year was very good in the offseason, but prior to that, you're like, all right, what even is this guy? They've already been quote-unquote interested in a couple of guys that have already traded teams, and they didn't get them.
Good point.
And now there's a couple more names that are out there that they're one of four teams.
All right.
Do they feel like the team that is going to be the one to emerge from that group?
No, not on one of these big ticket guys. But like
they
watched
the Mats.
Who's the name you're most confident they're going to get today, if there is one? Is there a name you're confident they're going to get?
Oh, no. I'm not confident that they get anybody.
I think they're going to get one of those D-backs pitchers. They've been linked to him.
Zach Gallen, you think?
Yeah, so one of those two. I would lean Merrill Gallen probably has the better overall track record.
No, I am not confident in any of them.
Gallen has the more high-end seasons on there. Kelly's been really good in the postseason, as Bradford said.
Ask me again.
Who's the Red Sox player you're most confident in them acquiring?
Charlie Morton.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Charlie Morton.
They have been linked a ton to Charlie Morton,
correct,
too. That's correct. True.
And that looks like last year's deadline, because it's not that Breslow can't make moves. Like, Heim Bloom just wouldn't even make moves.
Yep.
Right? Like, there's very,
correct.
There's like, but they were also in a position where you could have made the case they could have been sellers. You know, talking about Heim Bloom years, you can't with Breslow. Breslow, last year, they did like a soft buy. They added a bunch of bodies, and it was a mess. So you know his phone works. You know he can actually communicate a deal with another general manager. And they made one deal last night. They got Steven Matz. Like, okay, great. They traded their 19th rated prospect. They
Blaise
got
Jordan.
Steven Matz.
Yep.
And you're like, okay. And so he probably will make another move or two between now and 6 o'clock,
so,
but I think it's probably going to be Charlie Morton.
All right, if it's Charlie Morton, then that really is nothing.
Maybe it's that Orioles deal. Maybe it's Morton and
O'Hearn.
Brohearn, they call him.
Oh, they do.
Brohearn.
Brohearn.
Yeah, Ryan Brohearn.
Oh, he's moving up my list a little bit.
But he's a lefty, but he's another guy. He's another guy that only hits righties.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I do think he'd be better than Toro. So, like, it's an upgrade. I'll take it.
Yeah.
But I want a righty stick. Yandy Diaz, to me, feels like a bit of a pipe dream. Bradford made me feel a little better about that. No, to me, the Diamondbacks pitchers are right in the middle. Morton would be like Matz.
Yeah.
Matz is, to me, similar to, and this stinks, but similar to Lucas Sims and Luis Garcia a year ago. I bet he'll be better. It'd be hard to be worse than those two. But it's just fifth, sixth, maybe seventh inning guy who can give you a couple of innings, four, five, six outs.
Yeah.
He's a lefty. So, like, there's a use for that. I'm not saying he's going to be bad. It just doesn't move the needle. You know, at the top end, I would still have Cease right after Joe Ryan, who I feel like isn't moving. You know, maybe the Marlins pitchers, Cabrera and Alcantara. What is the pass? What is it again?
Up, up, down, down, left, right, AB.
Thank you.
Start, select.
/ Alcantara. So those might be impact players that have moved. To me, there hasn't been an impact starter that's moved yet. We can agree to disagree on Shane Bieber, who won the Cy Young in 2020. I don't think he hasn't thrown a pitch in the bigs this year.
Bradford was way higher on Bieber than I was.
That to me is not an impact name. So there's been five impact names that have moved. Three are relievers: Miller, Duran, Helsley. Two the Mariners got: Eugenio Suarez
right.
and Josh Naylor.
We had two hitters.
But like, to me, I wouldn't say Zach Gallen or Merrill Kelly are on the impact arms list. I personally wouldn't put them there.
Merrill Kelly's closer to
but
that.
But they would be better than Shane Bieber.
Yeah.
And so
Mitch Keller, same thing. I'd put him in there.
I couldn't say that Breslow got an impact guy at the deadline, but I could say he helped the club if they get those guys. If they get Charlie Morton and Steven Matz, and that's all they have to show at the deadline, he didn't even help the team.
So another way.
In a big way, he didn't make a significant move. He made moves similar to a year ago.
Another way to look at this is what move do they need to make, or moves do they need to make to prevent the Alex Cora second half August collapse? They are nothing if not consistent.
The Cora pity party.
They have a sad deadline.
Yeah.
They feel bad for themselves. They complain about the travel, the start time of games, and not getting any help. Like, who's good enough? So, like, in that sense, I feel like Merrill Kelly might be sort of enough for them to be like, not have a complete sad for the next month. Somebody lower than like Charlie Morton? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, for me, it wouldn't. Maybe those guys feel differently.
They shouldn't pout if they get Merrill Kelly.
Right.
If you get Charlie Morton and Steven Matz, you're allowed to pout.
Pout away. I'll be pouting with you.
I personally would pout.
Go ahead.
And you're going to hear what Alex Cora is up to today, but I was not encouraged when I heard this after the game yesterday.
And also,
what Alex Cora is up to today, because it doesn't sound like he's waiting on pins and needles for any big moves. It does not.
No. quantity over quality I also don't want, because that's what it felt like last year was.
Yeah.
It was like, let's just throw a bunch of, like, hey, look at all these names we brought in. And you're like, what?
No, you said it best earlier. You're like, if they just got the two names they've been in on, the significant names that move. They were reportedly in on Duran.
Yeah. Johan Duran and
Dombrowski outmaneuvered Suarez. Them, and Eugenio Suarez went to Seattle. If they just got those
that's
two.
That's a win.
That would have, even if they didn't get a starting pitcher, that would have been a win.
Then Breslow can go to the birthday party with Cora. You don't have to worry about anything. They can take the rest of the day off if they got those two guys, honestly.
Seriously. Which is why, that's what Dombrowski does. Dombrowski gets in there early and then takes deadline day off. He goes and enjoys himself on his off day.
He's probably still cooking something up.
Unlike Breslow, who's working the phones. So look, Keith, I think it's a good time to go on the clock. We're 8 days into training camp. I'd say six real practices, two padded practices into training camp with a couple of walkthroughs. In case anybody has missed anything, we decide to go on the clock and tell you what you've missed so far through 8 days at Patriots training camp. We've sat here through just about all of it. We weren't here on Saturday. And so we want to recap everything that's happened in just 60 seconds. You want to go first or second? Yeah. I'll give you the option.
I'll go first.
All right, Nick, let's let Keith take it away. Put him on the clock. What has happened in 60 seconds at Pats camp?
All right, Pats camp at 60 seconds. First off, first full padded practice was on Monday when Christian Gonzalez got hurt. Now, reportedly, it won't be a significant injury, but he's been out since with a hamstring injury. Drake May, year two, has looked really good. He has been solid, I'd say, B-plus throughout camp so far. Also, head and shoulders better than the other quarterbacks. Josh Dobbs is a distant second. Terrible. Wolvers barely even plays. Steph Diggs is healthy and was making plays early on in camp. Looks pretty good. Kyle Williams has flashed. The rookie third rounder has had two highlight reel plays, also a couple of drops. Pop Douglas and Kayshon Booty have been very consistent, and Mac Hollins showed up today getting some first-team reps during walkthrough. Will Campbell, mixed bag with arrow pointing down. He has not been great so far. However, they may have found somebody in third-round pick Jared Wilson, who is currently slotted to be their starting left guard. On defense, Kalavon Chasen. His name has rang out throughout camp. Could be one of two things. Either he's taking advantage of a bad offensive line, or he's due for a breakout year. Probably that first thing, though. Veteran guys like Carlton Davis, Morgan Moses, Harold Lynn, and Robert Spillane have all been given time throughout camp, but seemingly are going to be good to go.
Okay, that's everything that happened at Patriots that's training it. Camp in 60 seconds-ish.
Well,
right there.
False started and went long.
Damn it. Delay a game. False start and delay a game.
Well, you know, it's not.
It's camp for me as well.
It's training that's camp right. for all of us is what I was just going to say. I mean, how dare you?
All right.
Boy, Nick is ready. Nick is agitated. The Red Sox haven't done anything.
He's pissed.
We haven't seen him in a while.
No, we haven't.
Like, we haven't been, we're going to see Nick tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
We haven't seen him in a while, but I think seriously. He's going a little stir-crazy back there without us in the house. And, yeah, maybe a little agitated at the Red Sox. All right, good recap there from Keith.
Thank you.
Why don't you put me on the clock, Nick? I will give you mine. All right, here's everything you need to know about Pat's training camp in just 60 seconds. Mike Vrabel is the boss. Hands-on. Running the show. Congrats, New England. You have a head coach again. Drake May looks like he's making the leap. He has command of the offense, no interceptions through 8 days, arrow pointing up in year two. Good news, Steph Diggs looks healthy. Mac Hollins back today. Bad news, Christian Gonzalez hurt. He's your only elite player. Carlton Davis and Morgan Moses also being managed for age and injury situations, though Davis is out there today. Will Campbell, struggling, number four overall pick, has not been able to block as well as you would hope for. Maybe his short arms coming back to catch him. Jared Wilson, on the other hand, flashing. He's your third-round pick out of Georgia. Looks like your opening day left guard. A guy that Campbell has struggled to block is Kalavon Chasen. He might set the sack record if he went against Will Campbell for every rep. DJ James, another name to file away, undrafted rookie. Our eyesight is bad. Keith got binoculars, which was a good move. And the only thing hotter than Drake May, the heat. It's been oppressive here, although it's a little better today.
No, today's comfortable. I can live with today, but the first 3 days, and even a couple of days last week,
hot.
And we get the look ahead. What's next week look like? We're back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
joint practices with the Commanders. Right, Terry McLaurin.
Let me take a look.
We'll try to maybe wrestle him away from other teams. Oh, what
next
are you
doing? Monday.
80, oh, you got the weather check.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, 84.
Yep.
Tuesday, 82.
Yep.
Wednesday, 80.
Oh, nice. I like
that's
that.
Doable. Very doable.
84, 82, 80. I'm guessing Thursday we won't be here. 78.
75, but chance of rain.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Pretty good.
Not bad. Not bad. Looking forward to that, though.
So that's everything you've missed at Patriots training camp thus far. Jones and Keefe for every single moment of it, minus Saturday. Brought to you by McFarlane Energy. You can jump in on the Red Sox at the trade deadline, 617-779-7937. About 5.5 hours to go until the 6 p.m. deadline tonight. Craig Breslow hasn't done much to this point. He still has a little bit of time to get something done, just a little bit, although it doesn't sound like his manager expects much. We'll get to that and all the latest on the Red Sox right after Trending with Billy Lanny.
That was Cole Strange.
You didn't put him on his heels with that question. That was just a nice kind of softball.
I told you the way I do the snowball fight. That was the one I throw in the air while you look up at that one. I whiz one right at your face.
Lure him in. Oh, he's a nice guy. Oh, he's on my side.
I'm just glad to
And then he gets, oh, so your career is basically over.
No,
why do you suck?
No, I never said any of that. I think this is a you problem. Oh. You people hear what you want to hear instead of the actual words of the question.
It's we just know you, bud. You know, when you, we ask a question a certain way, we're like, oh, we know what he's really thinking. That's all. Cole Strange doesn't, or else he would have walked off the field, and we wouldn't have gotten an interview.
All right, I'll push back on that. Once. Your word was crossover. What could you have meant by, or a crossover, crossroads?
Yeah, crossroads.
Of what?
Is that not a fact? Do you not believe this is a crossroads in his career?
In his career?
Yeah.
Like, full stop in his career.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I may believe that.
People
but you're
laughed
staring
when
at
he
the
was
guy
drafted in the first round.
The question.
Yeah. I thought it was a fair question.
Yeah, do you believe this is you're at the crossroads?
I didn't say it like that, did I? I just asked the question.
As you look up at him with your neck crinked.
Had I thought it was a pointed question, I may have asked it differently, but I just thought it was a normal, accurate, third-year Cole Strange.
You've been sucked
hurt.
Up to this point, but now you're healthy.
No, he didn't hear that. Only you people heard that. That is you problem.
Sean McVay laughed at the Patriots for drafting you where they did. Did you agree with him? Because I certainly did.
All right. If you want to hear
he did. He laughed at you. I mean, I'm telling you.
It's a fact. Yeah. Are you telling me I'm wrong?
Cole, the truth is never mean. And if you missed our Cole Strange interview, you can go back on the Odyssey app, iHeart app, any of those places. It's on our socials, and you can see how little I look between Ted Johnson and Cole Strange, which I want to thank one of the more heady Twitch chat listeners for pointing out he's standing between two NFL players. Of course he looks little.
Yeah.
These are gladiators of modern times. I'm just an average size man over here.
Yeah, but you look little on NBC Sports Boston, though, too, and those are just all regular people.
You used to look little, but then you drank every night, and now you're fat. I'm just kidding. Damn. I lash out when I get back to 24. I'm just trying to get him a deal with Awaken 180. I think Stiz is going to be the next spokesman for Awaken 180.
Oh, I'm in on that. Would you do that?
I could or could not use it.
All right, Ted. So if I asked you, big picture takeaway, we heard your three-point stance. You're excited about the offense and Correct. What they're doing. But what were some of the other things that really jumped off the practice field for you today when you were down in Foxborough?
You know, the rookies. The rookies jumped out. I mean, if you, first, second, third, fourth rounders. I thought Drake May showed out. I thought there was a couple throws he missed.
Yep.
But I thought he looked pretty doggone good. Kyle Williams looked good. He was making plays. Jared Wilson and Will Campbell were both probably two of the stars of today's practice. I thought Will Campbell, Keon White, and I will say Keon looked, I thought, fantastic today. And that's kind of runs in line with what a lot of people are saying. But
did you see when he picked up the little running back?
One of those plays
where the play ended, and you know how everybody kind of stands up and hugs and nobody gives up? He literally picked up the running back and just started walking back with him. Yeah. I thought it was one of the more disrespectful things.
I think Keon's feeling it. I think he's feeling it. I think he likes the coaching staff. Yeah. I think he just looks locked in. But so
violence. They lured him in when Terrell Williams and then Milton Williams and Vrabel all started talking like violence. I think Keon White was like, oh,
yeah,
okay.
You kind of unlocked
something. My language. Yeah, we're on the same page. I'll fight for you. We're doing violence around here now. I'm ready to go.
But Barmore and Milton Williams both struggled against Jared Wilson.
Yeah, that's not good.
The third round offensive lineman out of Georgia. So I really liked what I saw from them. I saw plays that I want to see. So what is this offense going to look like? It's going to be different than when Tom Brady was here. Mm. I saw a lot of boots. I saw a lot of rollouts. Mm. I saw a lot of play action. Which I absolutely loved. I saw different elements of the offense. I saw the deep ball. I saw short to intermediate. I liked a lot of just the play action action that I was seeing.
Can I throw one more in there?
Go.
Down in the goal line, late 11-on-11, the first snap was a little speed option right pitch to the pylon. I was like,
how about that?
Josh. So, Josh is learning some things.
So people understand what Andy's saying. So it basically, you know, it's something you might see, like, you know, Lamar Jackson do,
yeah.
You know, where, or even like a You know, my boy there in Philly. Why am I?
Jalen Hurts.
Yep. Like, so an RPO where you fake to the running back, and then you either run it as the quarterback or you pitch it, like a triple option.
Yeah.
Either handoff, quarterback run, or you pitch it. He pitched it to Ramondre because he was about to get lit up, that being Drake May. Wide open, runs it right into the touchdown, into the goal line. If they can do plays like that, which they never did last year, oh, my goodness. So there's an element to the offense that it's not going to be as conservative as I was maybe anticipating. I saw audibles, which you didn't see that at all last year. I like the way they ran some of the drills. They didn't do just one-on-ones with the DBs and the wide receivers. They did two-on-twos. So it's really – that's really football. It's using one guy to distract you. So you got to be thinking as well as being good in your coverage. And so it tests those guys in a way that I hadn't really seen before. So I just like the drills. I like the whole operation. I like the young guys. And I'll tell you this, when it comes to Drake May's best throw – throw it up the right sideline or throw it up the left sideline. That just fade kind of route up the sideline.
Right in the bucket.
It is, Daniel, it is right in the bucket. And he had a nice little fade to on the 5-yard line to Jawan Baker.
Yep.
They high pointed it, went up, caught it. So I like what I see from the offense. And, you know, it's the receivers. And the Patriots defense is a good defense, not a great defense, but this offense is competing with that defense, which I've seen in the past, this time, usually in the last 3 or 4 years, where the offense looks years behind the defense. That's not the case.
Can I wet blanket it now?
Go. No, the only thing I would say.
That was fun while it lasted.
No, I agree with a lot of what he said. He didn't even mention the screen game the last couple days. We've seen a lot of different screens and things. I think there are the old cliche, like tools in your box to work with, your toolbox there. Yep. I think they have a lot more tools this year. I think Drake May has to be like, wow, I'm more competitive. I bring more knives to the knife fight. I bring more guns to the gunfight. The one thing I would just say about the competition is I'm really starting to not like the fact that Carlton Davis is never out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you marry that up with whatever this hamstring is going to be with Christian Gonzalez. Yeah. And I think we could get a false reading on the wide receivers, the passing game, because you got Alex Austin and Bolden and these guys who are supposed to be like fourth and fifth corners are like
rotational players at best.
Yeah.
And then you zoom it out a little bit and you look at just the secondary as a whole, and Kyle Duggar had a myriad of issues last year, and as you were talking about, you know, hasn't had the greatest start to camp either.
Right.
So your secondary looking relatively secure, at least your first teamers going into camp, to your point, has been something where the wide receivers can take advantage. But Ted, to your point about the offense, it really does seem like, and again, this is just 1 week's worth of observations, Josh McDaniels is doing a nice job so far of adapting his offense to what he has in his quarterback, which is a guy that, as we talked about in the 2 o'clock hour, still has his issues making those easy passes in the pocket, just your 5-yard, 10-yard out, but is a guy that has a million and one different tricks up his sleeve, the athleticism that allows you to be creative. So let's get creative with our play calling and try to maximize his strength versus kind of pigeonhole him into something he's not great at yet.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think you have Stephon Diggs. The way he was playing today, I go, okay, he looked like he could have 85, 90 catches this year. You have a solid tight end group. I think even 1 through 3 of their tight ends. Even Bell.
Wow.
Bell had a nice tutty today, as they say on the streets.
There and you go.
You know what? You guys, no surprise. Travion Henderson, they're going to watch the toss sweeps and the screens to him. Him getting to the edge is going to be a pride. However you scheme, how do we scheme getting Travion Henderson to the edge? They're going to find a million different ways to do that. And he was, you talk about on some of the toss sweeps, just the outside stuff, zone runs. He's going to be hard to take down. And I thought Ramondre, people have been saying he's lost a lot. He looks good. He looks different than what he has in the past.
Yep.
So I'm kind of expecting a lot from that running back position. So it's like I feel like the running back, tight end, wide receiver group, even though it's not close to the best, it's an upgrade from where it's been.
It's definitely an upgrade. I feel better about that upgrade than I do the offensive line upgrade. I think there is a better chance. And I also think both groups will benefit from low expectations. Like, people think
that this is a terrible wide receiver core. So if they go out there and they can just field three guys that are, I don't know, running the right routes, catching the ball when it's thrown to them, I don't know, not bitching about it post-game about the quarterback or whatever. Like, I don't know how much they have to achieve to appease us, to make us relatively happy with what's going on. And then I think the running back group is going to maybe be the best part of the offense. I'm on you with Ramondre Stevenson. He's definitely, I don't know if he's talked about it yet, about what he's done to his body, what weight he's lost, how he's changed his body. He's focused on ball security. He looks smaller and quicker. You mentioned the other day, Ted, even at his bigger size, he had a great jump cut. I think there's going to be a little more hop in his step this year. Travion Henderson could be good. And Gibson is just, he just gets overlooked. I think he's a guy that can make plays for you.
He's our best running back last year.
Right. Yeah. And now if we can get him to what he should be, like your third best running back behind Stevenson and Travion Henderson, I think you got a pretty good backfield that's going to contribute quite a bit in the ground and through the air.
Just to put it in perspective, and I heard Jones and Keefe talk about this, and it was really, I like that they highlighted this. And I think just to make our point even more profound, you look at who they started at wide receiver last year for the Bengals. Can you guess the wide receivers?
I can.
Who was starting against the Cincinnati Bengals week one at the wide receiver position last year?
I'm going to say at least two people who aren't here now and one that is.
That's right.
I'm going to say there was a Tyquan Thornton.
Two catches. Yep.
I'm going to say there was a K.J. Osborne.
Three catches for 21 yards.
And I'm going to say DeMario Douglas.
That's correct. Two catches for 12 yards. And then don't forget, Jalen Polk, one catch for 6 yards. Yeah. But think about that. Think about that group. That's who they beat the Bengals with last year. And I'm not saying it's a huge upgrade, but let's face it, it's a much more well-rounded wide receiver group this year at this time than last year, week one.
Yeah. If whatever you think of Diggs, he's an upgrade over those two other guys. I think Pop Douglas is a better player now. So even the Pop Douglas in that group, because he'll probably start this week, is a better version of Pop Douglas.
And Booty should be as well.
And Booty, I mean, if the Kyle Williams people are right, maybe a month from now at the end of August, we're talking about, wow, Kyle Williams had a great preseason action and showed that he's ready. We'll get up to some of that audio coming up.
I'll tell you
what,
he's shown a hell of a lot more in this camp than Jalen Polk did at this time last year.
Yes, there is definitely more upside. He's a little bit more uneven because there was, I don't know if you saw the drop on the sideline back shoulder throw
that
today.
That was a beautiful throw.
Oh, my God. I would have been so mad. I would have been so mad if I'm Drake May. I'm like, I can't put that ball anymore perfectly.
You know what? That is a throw you can't defend.
No.
You cannot defend that
throw.
The
only way it's incomplete is the way it was incomplete today. If the wide receiver drops the ball. And he did. But Kyle Williams upside. This wide receiver core is better. The tight end core is going to be what they are. I'm not sure I go quite as deep as Ted there. I love Hunter Henry. I like Hooper. I'm not as sure on the other guys. I don't know.
Westover and Jaheim Bell are better than you think is my point.
I also don't know if it matters. Like, if we're talking about third tight end, if the first two are healthy, you probably don't really matter there.
I give much more credence to Gibson as your third running back than whoever your third tight end is going
to
be.
Before we go to break, though, we do need to acknowledge the sad breaking news out of Patriots camp that the fullback, Lumpy, whatever the hell it is, was placed on IR. I was so excited. We had 46 back playing fullback. It was like the days of James Devlin and Super Bowl wins and Sony Michel riding his back. They placed their only fullback on IR. I do wonder if they'll go out and look for another fullback. Josh likes fullbacks.
Yeah.
He had fullbacks here. He had fullbacks in Vegas. I wonder. And tying this whole segment full circle, I've always said I think Cole Strange could be an elite oversized fullback like the Ricard guy from Baltimore. Just this big, beastly, pulling guard-style fullback. So, Cole Strange, don't let them tell you I hate you. I think you could be a Pro Bowl fullback.
Wow. I would really prefer he's a useful offensive lineman for this group, but I appreciate your optimism.
That's a fair point. If he doesn't play O-line, now they got another big hole in the O-line.
I need five guys that can stand in front of my quarterback before I worry about who my fullback
is. I know you're at a crossroads for playing.
All right.
But what if you played fullback?
Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons.
You would have liked that better.
We need to get to this Dan Orlovsky audio, which was one of the most over-the-top things I've heard about any team. And I don't know why he is just so excited about the Patriots and why he's saying something as ridiculous as he did. But
Peter Schrager would have been proud.
Peter Schrager would have been blushing at Dan Orlovsky's take on the Patriots. But they do rank very highly among NFL teams regarding their 25-year-old or younger players. Even that, though, I have to question the criteria.
Somehow.
How young and how good are the Patriots? Up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Good morning and hello. Morning and hello, and thank you to those who are watching the show either on Twitch or on YouTube. And the show on Twitch is presented by Springer's Jewelers. If you're looking for a diamond, then go see the team at Springer's in tax-free Portsmouth, New Hampshire. They will sell you your diamond for less than anybody else, and they will teach you everything that you need to know about diamonds. This is Jack from Fall River. Hello, Jack.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
Oh, not much. So the thing you guys kept talking about with the Pats this year and everything, everyone keeps saying that's going to be like 10 or 11 plus wins. The big jump, because I don't count that fourth win they won last year, but if they don't have an offensive line, and I know you guys keep saying like the offensive line got better and everything like that, but I don't see such a huge jump this year doing that, but I don't know. Everything can happen.
Listen,
possibility.
But again, if you just compare it to last season, your quarterback should be better. Like, I mean,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, I would say
absolutely.
Yes.
You have a head coach who has at least more experience and
better.
should be better.
Significant upgrade.
Okay, offensive coordinator should be miles better.
Much better.
Right?
I would agree with that.
And defense.
Defense should be significantly better.
I don't know if it's a... you know, a five-game jump that based on those things, but it definitely should be. And the schedule is one of the easier mm-hmm. schedules in the NFL. So all those things, I think, mm-hmm. should result in wins.
And Drake should be more confident. He should come into this season better prepared.
Oh, yeah.
We heard that he took it upon himself to make sure that he had work on during the offseason with his receivers and making sure that he knew how they were getting to work out, where they were going to stay during it. He's taking control of the team.
And mm-hmm. how many wins do you believe the Patriots would have had last year if Drake May began in week one?
Six.
Okay, so if you're going from six to nine, 6 to 10 is not quite the leap of 4 to 10, right?
No, it's not.
Right.
So it's not that he is all of a sudden making the team six games better. It's just 4 games better than they would have been had he played his entire rookie year.
Right. I think if you got 6 last year and then you upgraded when it came to Mike Vrabel, then I think you get another couple wins automatically, I would think.
Right.
No disrespect to Jerod Mayo, but...
I would completely agree with you. And the other thing is that, and people have to look at this, and I think they have to be honest, this team this year, now granted, is on paper, but is significantly better than last year's team on paper. I'll argue with anybody on any subject you want of that if you don't think that is true. Because we just talked about it. I think Drake May is not going to be significantly better.
Now, listen, when you say that in the Twitch chat or on the text line, you get the response, which is he only won one game last season.
No, and I don't.
That's a great analysis.
Yes.
Really deep hitting, hard hitting. Love it.
Just because of the things that we talked about with the offensive coordinator.
Do they beat the Seahawks in week 2 if Drake May's the starting quarterback? They had the ball on the plus 25.
Right.
I think they do.
Yeah, but do you beat Cincinnati in week 1?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Jerod Mayo was coach of the year.
Here's where the significant upgrade comes in. And Courtney, I think you're spot on because you hit the nail right on the head when you said he has the confidence knowing that he's the guy. Mm-hmm. The coaching staff believes in him. The coaching staff is basically saying, here's what we want you to do, Drake. Here's how we're building the offense around you. I don't think that happened last year because there were way too many voices on where they thought Drake May should be. And we weren't really sold on Alex Van Pelt as putting him in the right situation to be the right. Because he's building an offense for Jacoby Brissett when you should be building your offense around Drake May.
Yeah.
So it's two different. That's why I think significantly better for Drake May year two. Their defense is significantly better. Their O-line might not be significantly better, but is better. Mm-hmm. Your wide receiver room with the addition of Steph Diggs, massive upgrade. So yeah, that's significantly better. This is a team, when you look at it, and then we obviously talk about the coaches, that you should be able to go out there with your schedule and get 9 wins.
Well, Alex Van Pelt wasn't quite aware positionally of where players had played the previous season.
I forgot about that. I mean, think about
that. That was a bit of a disadvantage for
him. He was so bad.
But so think of that. At every position, you're better coached. You didn't even know that your most talented offensive weapon could play offense.
Insane.
Right?
I did not even think about like
that was a communication.
Right. Yeah.
Like Gerard, he would have gotten that. Right.
He'd ask the question.
Right. Yeah. Van Pelt could tell you all Chick-fil-A's within 5 miles of the stadium, but he didn't know his star defensive player could tell you.
And I don't remember if it was Billy O'Brien or Josh McDaniels, because they all run together, but they utilize Marcus Jones?
Yeah, it was Marcus Jones, and it was Billy O.
Yeah, it was Marcus Jones'
rookie.
So they utilize it, and that is like a great point. The fact that your offensive coordinator did not realize that you had a guy.
Wow.
That could contribute on offense just goes to show you how bad it was last year.
Bill O'Brien back on the show throughout the college football season, so I'm very excited about that. That'll be interesting.
Does BC have a chance to win the ACC? Do they have a
always got a chance.
Well, I mean, you know.
Wow. I think I've heard that they've looked good, their recruiting has been really good. So.
AVP, what's one word you would use to describe today's show?
Wow.
Thank you. Chime, you getting a play-in from Billy O this season?
I hope so. I mean,
he promised.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be last season. Couldn't do that. Couldn't even do it in spring practices.
Have you finished the design?
Play design I'm ready. Complete? Yeah.
Okay.
I'm locked and loaded, baby.
I feel like once the spring game.
What are we calling it?
I think Wiggy came up with Shine's Potatoes.
They need to put it in week one because we should be beating Fordham by a wide margin.
Yeah. I'm on Shime Island.
But the problem is once the spring game got scrapped, unless Shime, I know he's got a lot of time coaching soccer in the summer. When's that start?
Not until like August 30th.
Okay, well, BC's probably starting like a lot of teams are today at fall camp. So Shime's going to have to, right after the show's over, head down to Chestnut Hill and see if he can get out there for a couple days so we can get this play in early in camp and tweak it in any way we need to tweak it.
How about UMass week one Temple? How the boys looking?
Well, you know what? They start today, so it's going to have a great opportunity. New coach, new locker room. I'm excited.
I'm excited for Curtis's one college game lock weekend because you crushed that last season.
Yeah, I'll give my picks in advance. Very excited.
BC Fordham, right? That should be that'd be a good game to break out Shime's Potatoes.
Are we going
to
do a show UMass Tilgate?
Let's do it. They're down for it.
Are they ready to go down there?
Yeah, they're definitely. I gave all the stuff to Ken, you know.
Okay.
So, I mean.
Can we use Shime's brother's pork butt?
As long as the health inspector
doesn't UMass would love it. Their new head coach, you know, they would love it, you know. So it's, you know, I love college football.
Wow.
I completely forgot. He didn't know he had a player on defense.
Wow.
So I'm excited. I'm excited about college. I can't wait to see. Between UMass and my boys, between Bill Belichick and UNC.
We got Texas, Ohio State week one?
Yeah, between Billy O and BC, because, you know, we talked to Billy O, like, college football, I'm excited. Arch Manning, can't wait to see what he's going to look like. Man, I am excited about college football.
Notre Dame at BC, going to be a big weekend for that.
When is that one?
Thanksgiving.
They haven't. Speaking of reading into camp things, are you surprised that Travis Hunter has been about equal when it comes to snaps?
I am. I don't know what they're doing in Jacksonville. I think this is a huge, huge mistake.
Wow.
And I'm just.
I mean, maybe he had a deal with them and told them, "Listen, I'm doing it, and you have to acquiesce."
Yeah, but what's the head coach down there? Is it Liam Cohen?
Liam Cohen's the new head coach.
Yeah, you got to know.
Duval.
Yes, you got to see how the NFL works, and you got 2 years.
Duval
as a head coach. So I don't think you want to put yourself in a position where you're going to allow a player to come in and go, okay, dictate how much playing time he's going to get. And if you look at Travis Hunter, he's a little bit of a slender built. That's going to be too much wear and tear for this guy to be able to say, okay, I got to go, you know, from covering whether it's Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, to now going out there and having to go up against, you know, Patrick Surtain Jr., like these all-pro defensive backs. And I'm not saying he's playing these guys, but that's what he's going to have to do week in and week out. Shut down the best wide receiver and then go against the best corner. How are you?
Well, luckily he won't draw the best corner because Brian Thomas Jr.'s there. But
right.
I understand what you're saying.
Right. So I just think that just put him at one position and you, unlike Alex Van Pelt, know who he is and utilize him in situations.
All right. Coming up, we're going to play Hill Notes back right now. Courtney Ann, what is trending?
WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. Weekdays 2 to 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by the 99. Notre Dame, BC is November 1st.
Yeah. Second week of the season, too, for your boy Travis Hunter, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins.
Yeah, good luck.
In Cincinnati, so, yeah.
The Sox take one in Minnesota after jumping out to an early lead 8-5. Was the final on the road? Trevor Story had his first homer, a two-run shot since July 8th, while Jaren Duran also had himself a home run, a 446-footer. Lucas Giolito went six innings, giving up a run on five hits while striking out five. They've got the last one in Minnesota today, 1-10 first pitch with Brian Baio getting the start. Mike Monaco joins Will Fleming on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Kick things off with Joe Weil at 12:10 for the MassMutual pregame show. Day 6 of Patriots training camp, day 2 with pads, came and went without Christian Gonzalez. NFL insider Jordan Schultz reported that Gonzalez suffered a hamstring injury that will sideline him for a bit, but he is expected to be ready for week 1. Drake May completed less than half of his passes in 11-on-11 and 7-on-7 drills. And some good news, folks in attendance say that Will Campbell looked better, sturdier during 1-on-1 drills.
Wow.
Another one for the Pats today. Mike Vrabel will speak with media at 10. Practice is set for 10:15.
I believe you do have a top 5 defense. I'm just kind of like thinking you brought up Christian Gonzalez. You have Christian Gonzalez and the kid from Detroit. What's the kid from Detroit's name, Shime?
Carlton Davis.
Carlton Davis Jr.
He's got to be on the field first, but yes.
Yeah. But when you look at that, you added Harold Landry, you added Milton Williams.
Jelani Tavai. Guys dialed in.
I feel like I bother more people when I'm positive than when I'm negative. But Wiggy's exactly right.
I don't think you can say it's a top 5 defense.
Absolutely not.
But they added talent.
No, absolutely not.
If Milton Williams.
I mean, hate all you want, but.
They are say, seven, Shime, not ten.
Shime, say what you want. If Milton Williams and Barmore plays to the level that Barmore can play at, you could have a legitimately one of the top two best interior lines if Christian Barmore plays to the level that he should with Milton Williams. You don't think you could have the two best D-tackle tandem in the league?
You might, but like at the same time, there's also no depth. One guy gets hurt, it falls down like a house of cards. Like that's kind of everything.
I'm just saying on paper.
There's plenty of defenses that have depth. I mean, the Eagles have depth.
If TJ Watt gets hurt, the Pittsburgh Steelers, guess what?
They get worse, but they're like still a good defense.
Oh, they're not the same when they have him, though.
No, I agree. They go from being a, top 5 defense to a top 10 defense.
No, they're worse than that. Look at the numbers without TJ Watt.
All right, well, visit the 99 restaurant Monday through Wednesday for their new big deal meal, the crispy fried twin catch with North Atlanta cod and crispy shrimp. Just $14.99 every Monday through Wednesday. You got to love the nines. That's what's trending. Your Hill Notes.
No mention of Rob Manfred getting into it with Bryce Harper.
I was thinking about it for a lead tomorrow.
Okay,
so
all right. Okay, we'll wait.
I'm workshopping.
Spicy story.
Hill Notes coming up next.